You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When I wake up, I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk.
Oklahoma demolishes Tulsa on Saturday by a final score of 66-17. The Sooners move to 3-0 to start the season. Final tune-up before conference play begins this coming Saturday in Cincinnati. If you're looking for a place to criticize this team, we find ourselves basically nitpicking once again after an absolutely dominating performance by Oklahoma. 5 touchdowns from Dylan Gabriel, 5 interceptions from the defense, over 15 tackles for loss from Oklahoma's defense. It looked like everything was in order for the Sooners on Saturday. Very businesslike approach, a game that they were heavily favored to win, and they continue to win those games by the point spread in which they're heavily favored, which is opposite of what we have trending. Even going back to Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma comes in 30-plus favorites, usually don't cover those, but we're seeing them. Not only are we seeing them cover, we're seeing them hit the over. I'm here in a minute, I'm going to make another comparison to 2008, but it's time to start thinking about where this offense fits in the era of the modern run and gun, if you will, type offenses for Oklahoma going back to 1999. 2008 pretty much was the best offense that Oklahoma has ever produced during the Bob Stoops era, for sure. We know Lincoln Riley had that Baker Mayfield year when they lost to Georgia in the Rose Bowl. That was a phenomenal offense. I think just through 3 games, I think we're starting to see some trends with this offense that they're going to be right there along with those other ones. Now, we'll jump into that here more in a minute, but if you're going to find some concerns, again, we're pretty much nitpicking at this point, but if you're going to find some concerns, I think you're going to look at 2 things. Yeah, and we'll throw an honorable mention out to the turnovers, because they did rear up on Saturday. But you look at those turnovers, kind of extenuating circumstances for both of those. You got the kickoff return on Jahlil Farouk, where he was basically stripped from behind. That's a tough play for the ball carrier, because especially on a kickoff, your vision is downfield. You're looking at blockers. You're looking for lanes. It was already a long kickoff. He's thinking touchdown at that point. And ball security, yep, that's an important thing. But you don't always anticipate the guy coming from behind you, particularly on kick returns. And that's what got Jahlil Farouk. You know, at the end of the day, it's a turnover, but it's also something that's explained. You know, if you wanted to throw a nugget out there to explain that one away, you could. And you could also do the same with the interception that Dylan Gabriel threw, because guy's getting blasted as he's launching the ball. And I already saw it on Twitter. No, it's a terrible throw. Yeah, it was a terrible throw because he was getting blasted as he threw it. I think the if you're going to make an argument against that play, the argument's not in the way the ball came out of his hand. The argument is that the ball did come out of his hand. That's one that if you're breaking that down on film, you're thinking, man, just eat that. Eat the sack. You're getting chunks of yards at will against Tulsa. You know, these guys didn't punt until garbage time late in the fourth quarter. So you're basically doing whatever you want to do against their defense. So you take the sack there. You don't even try to throw it. But if I'm going to criticize, that's the way I'm going to do it. But here's what really I stepped away from Saturday going, I don't know about this. The first thing for me is injuries, particularly in the defensive secondary. You were already short Desan McCullough. You were already short Justin Harrington. And you got to think that those guys are going to be back for the Cincinnati game. And that's why definitely for McCullough, he was dressed out. Justin Harrington was not dressed out. But you got to think that McCullough was held out specifically so that he's ready for Cincinnati and the beginning of conference play. Justin Harrington's a little bit of a different story. You hope to have him back on Saturday because, you know, you want the depth of that cheetah position. But then you lose Gentry Williams, who, by the way, was having a fantastic game. And he got hurt early. But think about this. He got hurt in the first half early in the game, and he finished second on the team in total tackles with six. He had one tackle for loss, and then he had the interception. So Gentry Williams in his homecoming to Tulsa was off to a fantastic start to that game before going out with the injury. And now you look at the potential, at least, of being down three significant guys in your defensive secondary and how you're going to replace those. Now, again, I'm hoping, you're hoping, Brent Venables is hoping, everybody's hoping that you have Desaun McCullough and Justin Harrington back on Saturday. You could have Gentry Williams back on Saturday. We just don't know at this point, this early in the week. But that at least is something worth watching and monitoring this week if you're an Oklahoma fan. The other thing that really, if you're going to find a concern from this game, it's going to be the penalties. Second week in a row, Oklahoma's been racked up a lot of penalty yards. Seven penalties for 65 yards on Saturday against Tulsa. You're playing an inferior opponent. There's no need at all to have that type of penalty yardage marked off against you. And that's something that, you know, I said last week, if it was discipline or if it was pressure with the penalties against SMU, tighter game, a little bit stronger of opponent than what Tulsa is. And so you can dissect that and you think, well, it could be the pressure of the moment. It could be a discipline issue. Well, you know, time will tell. Well, time has told. It looks like it's going to be a discipline issue. Now, Oklahoma ran in a lot of guys in and out on Saturday. But the consistency between week two and week three has been too many penalties. And so if you want to nitpick, and that's what we're doing, you want to find some plays, some ways to criticize on Saturday's 66-17 performance. Well, there's two right there off the top of my head. And if you want to throw in the turnovers, you can make that a third one. Now, let's talk about things that went well for Oklahoma. And there's three big things that stand out for the Sooners on Saturday. In a game that you win 66-17, obviously a lot of things went right for Oklahoma. But the three things that I picked out that went the best are the points, the picks, and the receiving yards. 66 points for Oklahoma on Saturday. That's two times in 3 weeks the Sooners have exceeded. You know, the benchmark seems to be 65 because that's what everyone's talking about. But I think the benchmark has to be 66 because that's the lowest point total of your two big games. So in the opener and then on Saturday, you go 66 plus points. You got to go back to 1987, guys. That's the last time Oklahoma scored 65 plus points in two of its first three games. 1987, where most of the Sooner Nation that's going to be at the Iowa State game here in a couple weeks probably weren't born. I mean, no one in that student section would have been born in 1987. And there's going to be a lot of peoples in their, what is it, 87? You're going to be in your mid-30s that are be going to that game on Saturday. So you got to go way back in time, 65 points or more in two of the first three games. So that's, I mean, think about this. Because I mentioned that 2008 offense that, by the way, Kevin Wilson ran, the current head coach of Tulsa. 2008, that was Sam Bradford, his Heisman Trophy year. That team set offensive records across the board, not just for the University of Oklahoma, but they set NCAA records. But that team, that 2008 team that was so spectacular, they didn't top 65 points until November. So you had all of September, all of October. And if I remember right, I feel like, man, I don't even know why. This is just random stuff that gets stuck in my head. I'd have to go back and look, and feel free to do it yourself if you want to, but I feel like that 2008 team may have kicked off their season like on August 30th or something like that. But the point is, you had all of August, all of September, not all of August, you had all of September, all of October, and then you get into November before you score 65 plus points in a game. That was a great offense. Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in that offense. I mean, you sent all kinds of guys from that offense into the NFL. But they didn't score 65 plus points until November. And now Oklahoma's done it twice in the first 3 weeks of the season. Way too early, in my opinion. Way too early to draw a lot of comparisons for this offense to the 2008 offense. But you've got the components there. Will they have the consistency? What you don't know right now is what the running back situation is like. We're going to get into that here later on in the podcast. But you had established running backs from day one in 2008. We don't have that through 3 weeks in 2023. So that's one big difference. So it's too early to draw a lot of comparisons, in my opinion, to those two offenses. But it's not too early to say that this offense looks to be pretty good. It looks to be pretty special. It looks to be like it's going to be an offense that's going to be one of the top offenses in the country, and it's going to be very difficult to defend regardless of how good your defense is. And that's what you want. That's what Oklahoma had. I hate to go back to this, but that's what Oklahoma had with Baker Mayfield, Lincoln Riley. That's what Oklahoma was establishing with Caleb Williams. And now you look like you're back to that spot. And that's an automatic advantage when you can do things to find success on offense, regardless of what the defensive set is, regardless of what the defensive talent level is. If you can find a way to be successful offensively, you're setting yourself up. So that was good. The other thing that was good for Oklahoma was the interceptions. 5 interceptions. Again, you got to go back a long time. You got to go back to 2003 to find Oklahoma forcing this many turnovers, this many interceptions. And it was a solid overall performance from the defense. We can find some things, some holes in that defense that Tulsa was able to exploit. But I think it goes back to what we talked about on the onset of the podcast. When you begin to look at the injury situation with this defensive secondary and the way that Brent Venables and Ted Roof, the way they combated that was they just dialed up the pressure. Okay, well, you're going to find holes in our secondary because we're short some guys back there. Here's how we're going to counter that. We're just going to bring more pressure and make you either make a fast decision, make you eat the football, or make you run, tuck and run, and just get a minimal gain. And they started playing the odds like that, and you saw it, basically, you pretty much saw it start to shut down when Oklahoma dialed up the pressure. So there are concerns because Tulsa does have talent, but shouldn't have had that many open receivers finding holes in Oklahoma's zone. But it was a temporary problem that Brent Venables and company found a fix to. So then you look at it and you go, okay, well, here's how they're going to solve that in the future. Hopefully you get healthy, but also you know you can continue to bring pressure. But when you look at the 5 interceptions, you look at the 15 and a half tackles for loss, you look at Danny Stutzman returning the interception, I think it was 30 yards for a score. This is like we said with the offense, you got to start looking at the results through 3 weeks and you see consistency with this defense. Even last year, you know, that was not a great defense, but you can tell early on, man, this is where the defense is going to struggle. And I think we're so shell-shocked when it comes to Oklahoma football, particularly with the defensive side, after going through the Alex Grinch years, after going through the first year of Brent Venables, we're so shell-shocked that we have to find something to criticize with the defense. But through 3 weeks, it's becoming incredibly hard to do that. Now, there's going to be times where this defense gets burnt for points. We saw that again on Saturday. It's going to come in more crucial moments of more crucial games. But you're seeing a lot of consistency with the offense. Opened it up against Arkansas State. Played it more efficient and tight to the vest against SMU. Opened it back up against Tulsa. The offense was great. You saw dominating defense the entire game against Arkansas State. You saw dominating defense for most of the game against SMU. You saw dominating defense for most of the game against Tulsa. The 3 consistencies are pressure. I know, we're going to talk about Arkansas State, and there wasn't a lot of pressure, but we've explained that and talked about it and talked about it. And I think after you see the pressure against SMU and the pressure against Tulsa, you can pretty much write that off as them being a max protect and Oklahoma choosing not to bring the pressure because they didn't need to. But you see turnovers, you see speed, you see great read and recognition from the front seven. We bought in for 3 weeks last year, and then that the Kansas State game and just kind of brought the house down. So we are walking forward with this defense going, man, they look really good, but we're cautiously optimistic about them, I think is the best way to describe us right now. But there's three things that went great for this team, and the way the defense played with the five turnovers. I mean, even if you didn't have the five turnovers, I think you would say 15 and a half tackles for loss was pretty good for this defense. So you got the 66 points, you got the five interceptions, and then here's the third thing I think you look at with the offense again that went great for Oklahoma. Three receivers with 100 plus yards. Jahlil Farouk, 126, Nick Anderson, 120, Andrell Anthony, 112. First time since 2012, Landry Jones and company, first time since 2012, Oklahoma's placed three receivers with 100 plus yards and catches. And this is the Jahlil Farouk that I had been hoping to see for 3 weeks. I've been begging to see this version of Jahlil Farouk. You know Andrell Anthony, he's the guy that's going to stretch the field, and they did that from the get-go, just like they did against Arkansas State. But what I expected to happen against Arkansas State, what I expected to happen against SMU with Jahlil Farouk is actually what happened on Saturday in Tulsa. When you go deep with Andrell Anthony, and then the defensive coordinator for the other team's like, ah, crap. How are we going to do this? Now Jahlil Farouk is open to have a day like what he had on Saturday. I would hope this is what we see come moving forward, because it's going to be a stretch on defenses. It's going to be very difficult to defend this receiver group. And you got guys out there. I mean, we talked about the three that hit 100 yards plus. By the way, Nick Anderson, how bright is his future? But then that doesn't even take into account guys like Drake Stoops, who came silently, had a fantastic game, but doesn't get the talk like what we're mentioning now because of what Jahlil Farouk and what Nick Anderson and what Andrell Anthony did. But there it is. There's a couple of things to criticize from Oklahoma's performance. There's a few things that went really, really well. We're going to break down. I want to talk to you about Dylan Gabriel for just a minute. The running backs, we got to talk about that. And then we got to talk about the things that we talked about leading up to the game. This is the Sooner Nation podcast. Thanks so much for hanging out with us and being a part of it.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is the Sooner Nation podcast. I'm Matt Hofeld. Happy to have you along for the ride, be it for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, the entire podcast, or if you're a regular subscriber. Thanks so much for tuning in and being a part of what we do. I want to remind you can always participate in the podcast by hitting us up on Twitter at Sports Heartland. At Sports Heartland on Twitter, you can find us online, heartland-sports.com. We have a dedicated page specifically to the podcast each week. And then there's also the old-fashioned email, heartland_sports@yahoo.com. Let's talk about Dylan Gabriel for just a little bit. Dylan Gabriel is easy the whipping boy for Oklahoma fans. He's the guy that that we put a lot of pressure on his shoulders. Probably don't give him enough credit when things go well for him, and don't give him we give him probably too much criticism when things don't go well for the offense. But Dylan Gabriel was smooth on Saturday and really smooth for the third week in a row. He completed, 90% of his passes on Saturday, 421 yards, 5 touchdowns. For the season, that gives him a completion percentage of 82.5, 905 yards through 3 games, 11 touchdowns to just the 1 interception that we talked about on the first segment of this podcast today. Look, man, he's the model of efficiency for Oklahoma for this offense right now. And I know there's a lot of love in there for Jackson Arnold, and the future's bright. The future's bright with Jackson Arnold. Look at that dime he threw to Nick Anderson. That's 50-yard touchdown pass on a rope, on the spot. That's going to be a fun duel in the future. But when we're talking about the present, I don't think you can escape the fact that Dylan Gabriel's the guy for this offense in this moment, in this time. He's number 15 nationally in passing yards. He's tied at number 4 nationally for touchdowns, and he's number 2 in efficiency. The only quarterback who's been more efficient than Dylan Gabriel this season so far through 3 games, it's Caleb Williams. And I think there lies the rub when we talk about Dylan Gabriel. I've always said this. I've said it from day one. The biggest problem with Dylan Gabriel that we have as a fan base is that he's not Caleb Williams. We had all bought in full lock, stock, and barrel. We were all in on Caleb Williams. And then Caleb Williams went out to Southern Cal, and you get a guy in that's played at a lower level, didn't play in the FBS. Can he translate his game to this level? It was a bad team last year with a terrible defense, but the offense, if you go back and look, the statistics don't lie. The offense wasn't the problem in 2022. Yeah, there were moments when the offense stalled out. There were moments when fourth down didn't go well. Third down didn't go well because of the pressure to make those plays, because you know your defense isn't stopping the opponent. But at the end of the day, the offense was not the issue last year. And you saw the value of Dylan Gabriel in that Texas game. I mean, how much more are we going to have to hear 49-0? Because I promise you, Oklahoma goes out and wins the Red River rivalry. They go out and win that game next month. You're still going to hear 49-0 from Texas fans. That's going to stick for a while. But that showed you the value of Dylan Gabriel. This offense doesn't work without him. Now, depth has helped Oklahoma this year. Depth on the offensive line, depth at the skill positions, depth at quarterback. Because if Dylan Gabriel does go down, you have an option there with Jackson Arnold. So I did find it interesting that we didn't see General Booty on Saturday. It's a game that he easily could have played, especially that last series, just to come in and take a knee. I think it just sets the precedent that it is 1 and 2, and then there's a far, far chasm, far gap, or whatever you want to use, between 2 and 3, which is General Booty at this point. But I feel like we beat up on Dylan Gabriel a lot. And so you got to, I think, to be fair, you got to step back and say, through 3 games, absolutely, he's been the model of efficiency for this offense. And absolutely, he's been the answer. Now, speaking of answers, here's my question that I don't even know if it's a question anymore. I think I'm just at the point where I'm just giving up. And that is trying to figure out the running back situation for Oklahoma. I had, if you listen to the pregame podcast for Tulsa, I'd bought in. I was like, Tawee Walker, that's our guy. I'm it, Tawee Walker. He's leading the team in rushing yards, leading the team in yards per carry, leading the team in rushing touchdowns. So this is our guy. Let's hitch our wagons to him, as Toby Rowland would say, and let's ride this guy through the season. I was all in, 100% in, coming into this Tulsa game. Tommy Walker didn't touch the ball on Saturday. Instead, he had Javonte Barnes, 13 carries, 68 yards. Gavin Salchuk, 9 carries, 25 yards. Even Dylan Smothers carried the ball twice as a true freshman. 2 carries, 20 yards. Tommy Walker? Nope. Was he injured? Nope. Did he play? Yep. Did he touch the ball? No. So I don't know, man. So I don't... I've given up trying to figure it out because I think we're in one or two spots. The first spot is it's legitimately the way you practice that week gets you ready for the game. So whoever has the best practice in the game plan, the blocking schemes, the running of the offense, whoever has the best practice, that's the guy who's going to get the carries in the game. That's one option. The other option is going to be like I'm just behind in my timeline. Because I said last week with SMU, that's when you get to see this move transition from Marcus Major, Tawi Walker into Gavin Salchuk, Javonte Barnes. So I could have been a week behind on the timeline. Or it could just be completely random where DeMarco Murray throws a dart at a dartboard and whoever it lands on, that's who's going to go out there on Saturday. At the end of the day, the Sooners are finding success in running the football. They're doing using different guys to do it, and I don't know if we can try to figure it out. If you look at the season stats, Tawi Walker's still your guy. I mean, he didn't touch the ball on Saturday, but he still leads the team in yards, 161. Leads the team in number of carries at 29. Leads the team in yards per carry at 5.6. Javonte Barnes has jumped up into second place on the team after Saturday. 28 carries on the season, 122 yards, 4.4 yards per carry. Then you got Marcus Major with 17 carries, 70 yards. Gavin Salchuk has finally reached double digits, 10 carries, 26 yards. So, I mean, it's you figure it out. You can explain it to me. But I'm to the point where let's just see what happens on Saturday. Let's see who goes out there because I don't know. If you know, if Jeff Lebby knows, if DeMarco Murray knows, I don't even know if the running backs know. But the point is, Tawi Walker's been pretty impressive through what we've seen in the two games he played. Well, the two games where he carried the ball. And Javonte Barnes looked pretty good last Saturday against Tulsa. Gavin Salchuk seems to be still a little bit slower than what we saw in the bowl game against Florida State. So maybe it's just, again, nursing those guys along, getting them ready for conference play. But I think if we see this trend again on Saturday against Cincinnati of having Salchuk and Barnes as the top two guys, then you know they've just made that transition. But it could easily be Tawi Walker going out there and getting 20 carries against the Bearcats on Saturday. Time will tell. Let's talk about the things that we talked about pregame.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, so let's shut down this episode by talking about the things that we talked about going into the Tulsa game on Saturday. We mentioned several key players heading into that game. Some of them we've already addressed here in this episode of the podcast. We already talked about Dylan Gabriel's performance. We already talked about Tawi Walker's performance. Those were two guys that I had pegged, the guys to keep an eye on. Andrell Anthony, we mentioned him. We didn't talk enough about the significance of what he does. 4 catches, 112 yards, and he's just a guy who stretches the field. And you're going to have to pick your poison. We've said this, and we'll probably continue to say this. You're going to have to pick your poison when it comes to Andrell Anthony because of what he does speed-wise. And I can't wait to see what happens with Brennan Thompson because Brennan Thompson is a smaller version of Andrell Anthony. He's got a smaller frame, but he's got the same type of speed. And if you can run those guys on verticals on both sides or even the same side of the field, you can do so much with those guys based on when Brennan Thompson is able to get healthy and get out on the field with this team. But Andrell Anthony, 4 catches, 112 yards. And again, he does it all. He's the guy that they want the ball in his hands. And you've seen him used in 2 different capacities. You saw him stretch the field against Arkansas State. You saw him stretch the field against Tulsa. And then you saw him use mid-range and underneath routes last week against SMU. So they're going to continue to be creative with him. I think he's going to continue to be the key guy within this offense. I don't know that he's going to be the guy who leads the team and the number, volume of receptions like he did last week against SMU. But I think he's going to be a guy, when you talk about yards per catch and total yards, he's certainly going to be there at the top of Oklahoma's list. 2 other guys we mentioned defensively, Danny Stutzman running this offense. Tulsa, their strength is the run game. It was coming in, and that's why we pegged 2 linebackers as our defensive guys to watch. And it should be noted that Oklahoma held Tulsa to less than 1.5 yards per carry average on Saturday. That's dang impressive. When you're talking about a team that has the strength of what they are offensively and defensively, you always want to take away the strength of your opponent. And Oklahoma absolutely did that. And Danny Stutzman was a key cog in that. So was Jaron Koenig. Those are the 2 guys that we mentioned. But Danny Stutzman, 9 tackles, 2 tackles for loss. Of course, again, the big pick 6 that he had early in the game there in the first quarter. Just kind of Oklahoma came out and threw a bang load of haymakers, and Tulsa was pretty much punch drunk the rest of the way from there. Jaron Koenig, 3 tackles. 2 of his 3 tackles were for loss. So a good day. I think it's 5 tackles, not 3 though, for Koenig. 5 tackles, and then 2 of those 5 were for loss. So good day for Oklahoma on both sides of the ball. Interesting to note, special teams. The biggest play that Oklahoma made on special teams was negated by Jahlil Farouk's fumble. We've talked about on the podcast and on the website, we've talked about how special teams is once again a factor for this Oklahoma football program. And right out of the gate, you had a huge special teams play with that opening kickoff return by Jahlil Farouk, putting you in plus territory, way inside plus territory. But then you can't really talk about it because he fumbled the ball and Tulsa ended up with possession there right at the onset of the game. But you see the effectiveness of what this special teams unit could be. You've seen him with field goals have been solid. You've seen him on punt return. You've seen him blocking punts. And you almost got to see what they can look like in kickoff return. But alas, you got the fumble there that negates that. So those are the players that I said to keep an eye on coming into this game and how they did. And then we also had 5 predictions. Now, I didn't get to do the 5 predictions ahead of the SMU game just because of time and schedule and all that stuff. But I went back to it this week, 5 predictions for the Tulsa game. And let's see how we did. The number one prediction I made, well, we lost it on the opening kickoff, is that OU won't turn the ball over. Of course, Jahlil Farouk, very first play of the game, turns the ball over. Dylan Gabriel has the interception later on. So 2 turnovers for Oklahoma. We are 0-for-1 on predictions for this game. But then it gets better for us. Defense will record multiple quarterback sacks in the game. They had 3. They had 3 sacks on Saturday. You had 2 sacks coming in. So you more than doubled your sack production. You got up to 5 sacks through 3 games now for Oklahoma. But 3 against Tulsa quarterbacks on Saturday. Talby Walker, again, we've talked about him. Talby Walker will have 100-plus yards on the ground. I bought in. Like I said, I fully bought in on Talby Walker. And now I don't know. I'm just at a loss, drifting out in the Sooner Sea, because I don't know what happens to this running back room. I don't know who's going to come out in Cincinnati on Saturday and take that first carry. It should be noted, as a team, Oklahoma ran for and 19 yards. So probably not the greatest overall rushing performance. And what I was curious about with this meeting, and Jeff Lebby just chose to take what was given to him, I was curious as how much they would challenge a Tulsa defense that was kind of stingy against the run coming into this game. What I said was they were stingy, giving up just over 100 yards per game to their opponents. But then you look at Washington. Washington averaged over 5 yards per carry against Tulsa. And so you think it's not that they can't run against them. It's that the opponents choose not to run against them because it's so easy to pass. They're just so feeble in their defensive secondary. And so I kind of thought that maybe OU would challenge them more than they did on the ground. But, I mean, for what it was, they did mildly decent. We talked about Javonte Barnes averaging 5.2 yards per carry against the Tulsa defense, but he only got 13 carries. So that's 1-2 on three predictions so far. But then it went all well for us after that. Defense will nab at least 2 interceptions was one of my predictions. They got 5. One of them went back for a score. And then I had Dylan Gabriel would pass for over 300 yards after being held to less than 200 against SMU. Obviously, you saw the results there, 421 yards, 5 touchdowns for Dylan Gabriel. So, in all, 3-0 on the season, getting ready for conference play against SMU. Moving up just a little bit in the polls, I think is number 16 in the AP for Oklahoma. I haven't really had a chance to jump in and to dissect all that just yet. But now we get to turn the page. Tulsa is in the books. The books are closed. Cincinnati is on the horizon. So you can check us out every day, heartland-sports.com. Again, on Twitter, at SportsHeartland. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. If you like it, subscribe. Wherever you get podcasts, that's where we are. If you don't like it, thanks for hanging and checking it out. And we know there's a lot of good options out there. So thanks for giving us a try. Have a fantastic week, everybody. We'll talk to you later on about Cincinnati. See you sooner. I'm gonna be the man.